regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be talking with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association here in just a moment or two about what's going on in Virginia with Senate Bill 749. The ban on so-called assault firearms and large-capacity magazines. One of the things that would make a semi-automatic centerfire rifle or pistol an assault firearm is a threaded barrel. So while the federal government is making it easier, while the Trump administration is making it easier to purchase suppressors by, the federal government, we can call that, right? This is from an act of Congress, not just from the executive branch. Well, the federal government has made it easier and more affordable to purchase a suppressor by zeroing out the $200 tax. The state of Virginia basically says, you know what, if you want to buy a firearm that makes it easy to attach a suppressor, you're not allowed. Yeah, one of the many gun control bills that is advanced in Virginia out of the Senate Courts of Justice Committee. They're holding another hearing today. They've got another five or six bills, including a constitutional carry bill that, by the way, is going to get voted down. That's being run by Republicans. Permit to purchase bill, two measures, actually, permit to purchase. Those are likely to be approved. Another bill that would make it much easier to sue the firearms industry, gun makers, gun distributors, gun sellers for the actions of criminals. That, I suspect, is going to advance as well. But let's talk about the devil in the details of Senate Bill 749 with ASA's Knox Williams. Take a look and a listen. Knox, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
It's great to see you too, Cam.
Hopefully, winter storm fern? I don't like naming winter storms, but hopefully the winter weather didn't get you too bad.
Lost power for about 8 hours here in Atlanta, but that was about it. Not too bad, all things considered.
All right, that is good to hear. So let's talk about what's going on in Virginia. And honestly, if we went through every bill that's been introduced, we'd be here for hours. So let's focus on the bills that are moving right now. And unfortunately, there are a lot of those, too. Senate Courts of Justice Committee held a hearing earlier this week. They advanced about a half dozen gun bills. They're meeting today. They've got other bills scheduled, including a permit to purchase, a bill that would make it way easier to sue gun makers, gun sellers, distributors for the actions of criminals. But the one that I think everybody is kind of focused on right now, and for good reason, is Senate Bill 749. This is the ban on so-called assault firearms and large-capacity magazines. It has been amended since it was first introduced. And the biggest change that gun owners need to be aware of is that the grandfather clause for possessing large-capacity magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, has been stripped from this bill. So as of right now, if the law takes effect on July 1st, I am going to be a criminal for keeping the magazines that are currently in my possession.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is ludicrous. Scary stuff.
It's truly scary. I mean, it's tyranny at its finest, right? Like, the elections matter. You know, this is a direct result of what happens when election goes sideways, you know, for the Second Amendment. You know, the anti-gun Democrats really want to make Virginia, California, and they are doing their best to make that happen very, very quickly.
Absolutely. And then when you look at the definition of, you know, assault firearm, it's interesting. New Mexico's got a bill, Senate Bill 17, that started moving as well today. That bill defines an assault weapon, quote unquote, as basically any gas-operated semi-automatic firearm or long gun. No, actually, I think it's just firearm. Virginia's got the sort of the old-fashioned gun ban, right? It's the features test. It's any centerfire rifle or pistol with a fixed magazine capacity of more than 10 rounds, or a centerfire rifle or pistol that can accept a detachable magazine and contains one of a number of features, including, by the way, threaded barrels.
Yep.
So at the same time, you know, we've got the One Big Beautiful Bill Act taking effect, making it easier and more affordable to purchase a suppressor. This is one avenue in which Democrats in Virginia are essentially saying, hey, you know, if you buy a firearm that is ready made to use a suppressor you're not going to be allowed to purchase it because we're not going to allow those to be sold in the state of Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. What they're saying is basically, if you exercise your Second Amendment rights, we want to make sure that you cannot do so safely. Which is just ridiculous. I mean, there's really no two ways about it. You know, this feature test that has been, you know, kind of in the anti-gun ether since the 90s. I mean, the original 1994 assault weapons ban that passed federally, you know, had kind of a primitive version of this. They've since expanded it, but it's almost like saying, well, hey, you can have a car, but as soon as you put a spoiler on it or nice tires or soup up the end, you know, like anything that is a cosmetic feature of it, all of a sudden it's a bad car, right? Like none of these features make a gun more or less dangerous. They make them more ergonomic. Threaded barrels give you the ability to put something to reduce the dangerous sound level to a much safer sound level. You know, it really logically makes no sense, especially when you consider the context of the absolutely minuscule number of long guns that are used in homicides nationally every year. You know, of about what, 15 to 20,000 homicides, you know, taking out suicides on that, 15 to 20,000 homicides. Do you know how many use a long gun of any sort on average, according to the FBI?
What, 500, 1,000?
Less than that, generally around 200 to 300. Wow. Right. So you're talking about something that is so statistically insignificant that it's barely going to be a blip on the radar, even if they were to outright ban and confiscate all these things. And make no mistake, that is what they are attempting to move towards. Right. It's these feature tests. It's getting them out. It's making people registered, turning them into criminals overnight, forcing compliance, and then putting them in a position where they're, you know, sorry to be frank on this, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I take this for what it's worth, and I'll tell the audience too, take this for what it's worth, because I don't have confirmation of this, but I was speaking to somebody who is at the state capitol in Richmond on a very regular basis, and they told me that the initial draft of Senate Bill 749, not even the one that was introduced, but just, you know, the sort of initial draft that was circulated, did not have a grandfather clause for the owners of so-called assault firearms, that you would have 180 days to either turn them over to police, move them out of state, destroy them. Again, that language is not in the bill that was introduced. It's not in the bill that is before us right now. But, you know, again, you talk about the intentions. That is the intention, I think, right? I mean, if they're going to say you can't own these magazines that you've lawfully possessed, why on earth would we think that they're going to let us own the weapons of war that they don't think belong on American streets, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're talking about a new legislature and a new governor that's been in power for, what, a couple weeks? You know, this is just the beginning.
So the one bit of good news that I want to share, and I haven't written about this at Bearing Arms yet. I actually just found this a couple minutes before you and I started talking here. Christopher Newport University's 2026 State of the Commonwealth poll was released today. And one of the questions that was asked, what do you think about the need for making gun laws stricter? 50% support. That's it. 50% support, 39% keep restrictions as is, 8% should be less strict. Now, Knox, that is really, I think, before the vast majority of Virginians are even aware of the details of these gun control bills, and they're only at 50% support. So I think, you know, gun owners, we need to be talking about this to our friends and family members. We need to be talking about the penalties that are attached. We need to be talking about the attempt to turn lawful gun owners into criminals for possessing the things that they possess, the, you know, possible 2-month waiting period before you could purchase a firearm if the permit to purchase bill takes effect, the live fire requirement that is going to make it really difficult, especially for people in rural Virginia, where they might not have access to a commercial range to take live fire training before they can purchase a firearm. I firmly believe that with, you know, this wavering level of support right now, we can have majority opposition to these gun bills before they get to Governor Spanberger's desk.
Certainly hope so. And that has massive ramifications for somebody that has national aspirations.
Yep.
Right. She doesn't just want to be the governor of Virginia. She wants to be the president one day. And that matters. And that can absolutely temper, you know, the impacts of the bills that she chooses to sign or to veto. So absolutely. We need to keep up the heat as much as we can in as many different ways as we can, because you never know which straw is going to break the camel's back. Look, it could all be for naught. That is a very real possibility. They've got the votes if they want this and if they want to prioritize it. And frankly, there's really not a lot that we can do if that's the case, But we should be doing everything that we can to slow this down, to stop it. And if that doesn't work, you know, as we've seen across the country in a post-Bruin environment, you know, Bruin retaliation legislation, this is among the worst of it that I've seen across the country. You know, lawsuits will be filed virtually immediately. Last week, we were out at SHOT Show. We were able to sit down with a lot of the folks from the White House. There's a possibility that they could weigh in. You know, folks like Harmeet Dhillon with the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division. You know, so there's a lot of stones to turn over. Don't think that this is the end. Really, in essence, this is just the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Harmeet Dhillon has already commented on X about the magazine ban, saying that, you know, this does not comport with Supreme Court precedent. So I'm glad to see that she's taking a look. Frankly, I don't know how many justices live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, but I think there are a couple of them. And you know, maybe this will prod some of the justices to get a move on taking some more Second Amendment cases, right? Because if they could be directly impacted by this, all of a sudden it's personal. And, you know, I did write about this earlier today. The Fourth Circuit is incredibly hostile to our Second Amendment rights. But we've seen some success in state courts too, right? So Gun Owners of America recently working with VCDL, able to overturn the state's universal background check law. So that is another avenue where, you know, honestly, you know, I would not be surprised if we see actually a sort of a dual track system where you've got some lawsuits filed in state court, some lawsuits filed in federal court. Hopefully the DOJ, as you say, gets involved. And, you know, you're right. If the Democrats are intent on passing these things and Governor Spanberger doesn't care about shedding her moderate label that she ran on, yeah, a lot of this stuff is going to become law. But that is not the end of the story. And as you say, Governor Spanberger, I think she does have national ambitions. You know, typically in Virginia, governors are limited to one term. So after they're done, after that 4 years, if they want to continue a career in politics, they're looking at the U.S. Senate or they're looking at a run for president, right? Either way, I think if Spanberger is looking towards the future, yeah, she may decide, all right, I'm gonna keep that moderate mask on a little bit longer and maybe veto a couple of the worst of the worst. But it makes it easier for her to make that decision again if the opposition to these bills is overwhelming. So we cannot give up. We can't be quiet. Now's the time to actually ramp up our activism, even knowing that the legislature is in control of the Democrats. As you say, there are a lot of avenues that we can pursue. And right now, the lawsuits are in the future. Right now, we need to focus on the legislation and stopping as many of these bad bills from becoming bad laws as we possibly can.
Absolutely. It's one step at a time. You can only put one foot in front of the other. That's all that we can control. And, you know, down the road, you know, we can contemplate, we can plan contingencies, but let's focus on what's at hand. You're absolutely right.
Well, listen, Knox, again, I appreciate you joining us on the program. Hopefully, you know, Georgia is able to avoid this mess that Virginia's in right now. Yeah, right. And that's a real concern. I mean, as we look at, you know, elections across the country this year, you know, Virginia was never a safe red state. I don't know that you can call Georgia a safe red state either. You got two Democratic senators. You know, the last governor's race was not as close as the one before, but I mean, it's entirely possible that Georgians can find themselves in a world of hurt if they let their guard down too.
Yeah, look, it can happen anywhere. You know, I do think that Georgia went purple probably 10 to 15 years earlier than it should have. Nonetheless, we still find ourselves in a position with Senator Warnock and Senator Ossoff, two folks who are adamantly and vocally hostile to the Second Amendment. I hope that we can turn that around. You know, I think Cook just turned it from a likely Republican to a toss-up in a lot of the Georgia races. But nonetheless, it's primary season, right? The Republicans are beating up on each other. I think that's to be expected at this stage in the cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully once we get through the primaries and consolidate around individual candidates, that will be a different story.
Yeah. All right, Knox, listen, man, I know we'll be doing this again very soon, but thanks for joining us on the program today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I appreciate Knox joining us on the program. And, you know, going back to that poll for a second, it really is, I think, important for Virginia gun owners to keep talking about this, right? I know they've got a veto-proof majority, not that they're going to need it, I think, in the House. Senate is still very close. The Senate elections are going to be next year in Virginia. You got a two-seat majority. I think it is possible. I'm not saying it's likely, but I think that it is possible to put some pressure on Democrat senators to the point that maybe some of these bills become unacceptable. Not all of them, but some of them. I also think that it is possible to put pressure on Spanberger. You know, as Knox and I were talking about, she definitely has plans for higher office. And in Virginia, that path generally goes from, you know, governor to Senate to a presidential run. It's been a while since we've had a Virginian elected president, but it is likely that Spanberger, you know, is already eyeing what her next campaign will look like. And she did run very much as a moderate. Now, she also embraced gun control at the same time, right? So I'm not saying that we'll be successful in knocking down any of these bills, but with just 50% support for making gun laws more restrictive in Virginia before the vast majority of voters are even aware, again, of the particulars of bills like Senate Bill 749, of the permit to purchase bill, I think it is very possible to get opposition to these bills, 60%, 65%, and that is going to end up putting pressure on Democrats, because now you're talking about pressure coming not just from Republicans, but from independents as well, maybe even some Democrats. It should be noted that there is a group of liberal gun owners who are planning on holding their own lobby day at the Virginia Capitol. I wish them all the best. I hope turnout is strong. I think this is in early February. If I'm able to get out of my driveway by then, maybe I'll head over to Richmond and cover it. But again, we need to be doing everything we can right now. And part of that is educating everybody we know about the impact that these bills will have, not on violent criminals, but on lawful gun owners. And I think we do have the opportunity to make some inroads here. All right, having said that, let's talk about today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Michigan. Man sentenced to time served and probation for robbing, I think this is pronounced Celine, but you tell me, Michiganders, if I'm getting it wrong. I know sometimes we've got some geographic things. Stanton, Virginia looks like it should be Staunton, things of that nature. Yeah. So anyway, let's get to the actual story itself. This individual, 60-year-old man, robbed a subway at knife point. This was February 23rd last year. Police were called to the restaurant around 2 o'clock that afternoon after a man wearing a red checkered hoodie reportedly robbed the store, again wielding a knife. He fled the scene in a black Chevy Equinox. 60-year-old John Fulton was arrested and was initially charged with armed robbery, assault with a dangerous weapon, carrying a concealed weapon, assault and larceny between $200 and $1,000. But he was offered a plea deal by the Washtenaw County Prosecutor's Office, and he ended up pleading guilty to, I believe it was assault and larceny between $200 and $1,000 back on December the 9th. And then this week, he received his sentence, 130 days in jail, with credit for 130 days served. So there you go. Armed robbery, just a couple months in the county jail. That's all the punishment that's needed, apparently, in Michigan. Now, if you're carrying a concealed firearm without a permit, oh, I believe there are some mandatory minimum sentences that come with that. That's a felony offense. Yeah, for possessing a firearm in public without a permit. But, you know, using a knife to rob a fast food restaurant, that's just a minor crime. That can be dealt with a slap on the wrist, like somebody exercising their Second Amendment rights without a government-issued permission slip. Today's Armed Citizen story from Washington State, where investigators say a homeowner shot an intruder in Lake Forest Park. They're also investigating whether that intruder had any ties to an earlier house fire there in the area. This was Sunday morning, about 5 o'clock. Officers from the Lake Forest Park Police Department sent to a residential burglary call. Homeowner reported that an intruder had been shot by somebody living in the home. Police were able to provide life-saving measures to the injured intruder, who was then taken to a local hospital for further evaluation and treatment. About an hour and a half before that, officers had been called out to assist the Shoreline Fire Department with a house fire. It was just one block south of where this burglary took place. All of the humans managed to escape without significant injuries. The family dog, though, was found dead in the fire after, or in the remains of the home after the fire was put out. Authorities right now are actively investigating to determine whether there's any connection between the burglar and the fire right now. They've not said anything that would indicate that is the case, but this does appear to be a case of self-defense when it comes to the homeowner shooting that intruder. And finally, today, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a good Samaritan in Louisiana helping a driver stranded on Interstate 20 during that winter weather that you may have been impacted by. Knox had his power knocked out for about 8 hours. Thankfully, our power stayed on, but it is it's like Hoth out there right now. It's just a sheet of ice. I was able to get my Jeep up the driveway. I've got a gravel road that's about a third of a mile long. Was able to get up there without too much trouble. Ended up getting stuck even with the four-wheel drive, but once I got up there for a couple minutes, but I managed to extricate myself. But when the plows came through to clear the roads, there's about a foot and a half wall of ice and dirt and snow that's just packed solid that is preventing me from actually leaving my property, at least behind the wheel. So, yeah, this was a wicked weather for a lot of people around the country, you know, in places where typically you don't see stuff like this. So Lincoln Parish, Louisiana, one of those places. Greg Terrell or Terrell lives near an exit for I-20. And he ended up hand delivering meals and gasoline to drivers that were stuck there on the interstate. Greg used to be a over-the-road truck driver. He said, there's something God put the spirit on and said, man, help him, God, because I drive for a living. He said, and, you know, I broke down. He says, I've broken down before. I had to be out there in the sun or in, you know, waiting in the car, waiting on somebody to come rescue me. He said, I didn't think nothing about it. It's what I do. He said, I help people and I serve, you know. So, again, delivering hot meals, delivering gasoline so that folks could, you know, restart their car and have some heat while they were stuck on the interstate. That truly is the act of a good Samaritan. And Greg Terrell from Lincoln Parish, Louisiana, we thank you for your very good deed. If you wouldn't mind heading east now, maybe you could help me dig out before the next round of snow hits this weekend. I don't know if Greg has the wherewithal to do that, but who knows? Maybe when I get out there this afternoon. Thankfully, I've got a hardware store, the Amish grocery store that opened up about a quarter mile from my place. They also opened up a hardware store afterwards, so I can at least walk to the hardware store, get access to some pickaxes and mattocks, and hopefully knock that stuff down. And who knows? Maybe a good Samaritan will come by and help me out while I'm doing that. But anyway, we will be back tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. In the meantime, I encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, where we're keeping you abreast on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, which hopefully today does not involve any more comments from President Trump or top administration officials suggesting that there's something nefarious about carrying two magazines or carrying at or near a protest. Fingers crossed. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe.